welcome to Listeners' Voices for Saturday, April 26th. And I'm happy to share the fact that I have co-host Frances back in the co-host chair today. Welcome back, Frances.
Thank you. Hello.
Yeah, it's been a while. So our prompt today for Listeners' Voices, where we put out a prompt, we invite responses written or recorded, and get your pencils ready. I'll share the email address in a minute that you can send those to. Today, I don't have it actually written out in front of me here anywhere, but it was basically stories of personal impacts of the changes going on at the federal government level, especially in funding and or programs and or anticipated ones. And so we have covered several subjects with today's responses, and people are always welcome to reply to previous responses. In fact, we have a response to the youthful mischief prompt of a couple weeks ago that we will share before we get into these impact stories. Anyway, if this episode brings up some thoughts to you that you would like to share, we always welcome responses to previous prompts. So the email address to share those, written or recorded by a voice memo on a smartphone, is ktwhwriters@gmail.com. And anonymous submissions are always welcome. We have a couple today. So let's see, anything else we should cover before we dive into this? We do archive our shows for the past few months on the website, so that would be ktwh.org. The program's drop-down includes listeners' voices about three or four lines down. So a couple weeks ago, last time, I believe, it was hospitality, but in the week before that, or 2 weeks before that, was youthful mischief, or things I never told my parents. And last week, we had a belated submission from Jude Timke. It was a very interesting, different take on the subject, what she never told her parents about a lot of what she was doing during her adult years of her working life, because she thought it might
frighten them.
Frighten them too much. Yeah. So this is not that. This is a very appropriate story. This was during Patrick's college days, I believe. And so we'll hear about the heist from Patrick Eller.
I have made many mistakes as I grew up. For a variety of reasons, I compromised what I knew was right for the sake of my appetites or overwhelming desires or just plain stubbornness. In fact, one of the strongest temptations to misbehave come when I'm told something was impossible or that it could not be done. I cannot begin to tell you how many life-changing events followed these impulsive decisions. There is not much I regret. I learned from the mistakes that I made, and I stopped doing the things that proved to be harmful. Take shoplifting, for instance. I'm embarrassed to say that I gave that a try in my younger and impoverished years. I learned the mistake of my ways and long ago gave up the practice. But there was one incident that unfolded so seamlessly, so theatrically, that it might be considered art. And I could not guarantee that I would not do it or something like it again. In the early 70s, some friends and I were spending the afternoon in St. Paul, Minnesota. One of our stops was an underground bookstore right downtown. It was the same bookstore that a year earlier I had found Lawrence Ferlinghetti's book of poems, A Coney Island of the Mind. And I read it in one night by the glow of a streetlight in the construction site of the future Interstate 94. My friends and I were browsing in the bookstore shelves when the clerk asked me if I'd seen Abby Hoffman's newest book called Steal This Book. We wandered over to a rack by the counter that was full of Hoffman's new book. I pulled one from the shelf and I was thumbing through its pages as the clerk was telling about its most outrageous chapters as he picked up a copy to show me something in particular. I was looking over his shoulder at the pages he was referring to as he started to laugh, telling me how many people he had caught trying to steal this book. No one, he said, had gotten away with it. Don't ask me why, but as he was busy paging through the book, I took the copy I held in my hand and slipped it under my shirt and back and under my belt. The clerk was going on and on about not losing a single copy while he was trying to find a certain section in the book in his hands. While I nonchalantly picked up another copy of the book from the display and held it in front of me. When he was done showing me the chapters he chose, I opened the book in my hand and I paged through it. Still bragging, he put his copy back on the shelf and I said, "You catch 'em all, eh?" "You're damn right," he said. And as I closed the book in my hand, I placed it, too, back on the shelf. Shortly after, my friends and I left the store with the book tucked into my belt. I pulled it out on the way to the car, and my friends laughed their asses off at my audacity. That left only one thing to do to complete this bit of street theater. We drove slowly down the avenue that passed in front of the bookstore, and as we went past its large window by the counter, my buddy laid on the car horn until the clerk looked up to see me holding up a copy of his Steal This Book and smiling like an idiot. The look of astonishment on his face was well worth the risk, and I was just really glad the traffic kept moving and that we were on our way. I still cringe at the thought of having taken what was not mine, but the senseless risk makes this story worth telling. Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. This is Patrick Eller.
Well, we're listening to The Big Heist from How the Grinch Stole Christmas. That was quite...
entertaining.
Quite entertaining, Patrick. I love the way you set it up as kind of a work of art. How could you resist? There are probably other stories like it around the country about that particular book.
Maybe we could use that as a prompt. What have you stolen?
Ooh. I wonder how many people would be willing. We get a lot of anonymous ones on that,
anonymous.
Maybe. Yeah.
And we'd take them, too.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, maybe. I wonder, well, let's see, the double prompt thing didn't work out that well this time. We are thinking that maybe not everybody wanted to think about everything that possibly may impact them with things happening on the national scene. And so the alternative prompt for this week was Earth Day. And any either experiences around it or thoughts about it. And we didn't get any responses to that except for several short sayings or excerpts from essays contributed, which we will hopefully have time to get to later. But it did occur to me, I don't know if double prompts is a good idea or not. I'm just thinking what have you stolen? Might be a good one to have an alternate for. In case we don't get many confessions from that one. So switching gears to the impacts of the changes going on, I guess we'll just launch right into Richmond's. He addresses a concern that maybe could affect many of us in our community. Here we'll hear from Richmond.
Hello, this is Richmond responding to the prompt with a story of potential impacts of existing and proposed changes in federal government funding and practices. Where is Bayview Terrace? Bayview Terrace is in the heart of downtown Two Harbors. Built in 1969 at 6 stories, it is the tallest building in Two Harbors. There are 58 apartments. Most are small one bedrooms, 500 to 650 square feet. There are perhaps 5 or 6 two bedrooms. As the number of folks living at Bayview, best guess, 65. I'm on the 6th floor facing east. I get the sunrise, the morning sun, the moonrise. And looking out from my living room window over the stand of red pine, I watch the daily dance of gulls, gackles, crow, pigeon, geese, and occasionally an eagle. It is heavenly. Bayview Terrace is a community of folks, some older like me, 70 or something, to the 102-year-old Dancy woman, Ellie. Then there are two, those younger folks with a non-age-related disability. It's a good place to live, have affordable housing, and be part of a community where, mostly, we get along. Bayview Terrace is a HUD program. That's capital H, capital U, capital D. Housing Urban Development, oft-times referred to as public housing. Some of us have rent 30% of our income. Others pay a flat rate. Many here also receive Medicaid, another federally funded program facing federal government modification. HUD and Medicaid assist to provide affordable housing and medical care to those who do not have the means or ability to afford said housing or medical care. HUD and Medicaid provide vital services to vulnerable populations. For now, the HUD program is what I shall speak to. According to the Associated Press, a spokesperson for HUD did not respond to repeated requests for comment. An internal document reviewed by the AP said the program is being terminated at the discretion of DOJ. Two HUD employees who have knowledge of the program spoke to the AP on the condition of anonymity for fear of reprisal, confirmed the directive to shutter it. How will this shuttering of HUD affect residents of Bayview Terrace? The idea of this directive to terminate gives me cause to shudder. From Bayview Terrace, we are listening and dying to find out.
Thank you, Richmond. It's something we haven't heard a lot about, as much as some of the other things, I think, the HUD program itself.
Right. Yeah. It seems to be hitting things across the board in very unexpected ways as well.
Yes, we will hear more about Medicaid in a little bit, but I think next let's hear from Judy.
Judy Sousen.
Right. A particular issue that affects many of us.
Judy says, I am a senior citizen, and my main source of income comes from Social Security at this point. I have heard no definite plans for cutting Social Security, but rumors are flying all over the place. Cuts would certainly affect my ability to pay rent for my apartment and food costs. I am saddened by the cuts to environmental programs, such as our parks, public lands, and waterways, and educational programs, especially those for children with disabilities. I have a great niece who is graduating from UMD with a major in biochemistry. She has been accepted into a master's program and is interested in doing research. Will there be money available for her? Her father, my nephew, works for the Postal Service. What about his job? A sister who has diabetes and has had a leg amputated receives disability payments. Could these be cut? So much uncertainty these days.
Hmm.
Indeed.
Yep. And Judy's good friend Becky has a recorded submission here that we'll share next.
This is Becky in Two Harbors. The prompt this week is how the changes from the federal government are affecting me or people I know. I limit how much news I take in. I try to follow what is happening without dwelling on it too much. I am saddened by things that do not follow values that I want for our country, such as deporting people without giving them a chance to make their case. I am concerned about what the reductions in scientific research will mean in the future. I am concerned about Social Security and Medicare, since I am drawing on both of them. So far, nothing has changed, but I have lost the sense of being able to really count on them being stable. I've decided to do at least a little more to promote community. I don't know what we can change, but we can do our little bit. I am particularly concerned about how the current political climate will affect two extended family members who are both trans. One is a trans woman and one a trans man. They both decided to make the shift to living as the person they felt like when they were young adults. Each of them had a rocky time, considerably different stories, but each one quite rocky, before transitioning. And while it has been difficult, they are both doing so much better now. I worry that the current antagonism toward trans people will make life harder for these family members I care about.
Indeed. Thank you, Becky, for sharing those thoughts. I know another member of our community who likewise has trans members of her extended family who's very concerned about this and has expressed those feelings and suffered some pushback about that, which is regrettable. But to also be threatened with pushback from the government and services that the rest of us expect is even harder to accept, I think. And that the call for compassion that the Episcopal Bishop made to the president face-to-face back on at inauguration time, something that doesn't seem to have been heard. I had in mind the Medicaid submission next, and this is an anonymous submission.
From Anonymous, losing Medicaid for me would mean stopping treatments that keep me from being bedridden and that give me a chance at remission. It would mean stopping medications that allow me to continue to be independent. It would mean not going to the doctor regularly to check on my prognosis and how I'm doing with treatment. It would mean I'd have to cut visits to my doctors and specialists down to a very minimum amount, if at all, depending upon what I can afford. Losing Medicaid would mean no longer being able to go to the dentist. Because of my condition, I need to see a dentist regularly for fillings, root canals, and extraction. If I lost Medicare and all the above services had to end, this would eventually lead me to being bedridden and unable to care for myself. At this point, I would need to be in a care facility. However, if there was no Medicaid, then there would be no way to pay for the care facility. In that event, I will stay with family till I pass away. I'm lucky in that I have family who will take me. Some people who are ill have no one. Some people call people like me, on Medicaid, parasites. My life means nothing to them. I'm a waste of their time and money. For many years, I worked extremely hard to survive and get what I needed and paid hefty insurance out of pocket. But now, in my time of need, I can't have help. Right now, I haven't given up hope on my life and the chance of remission, as I am surrounded by an awesome treatment team, and I have Medicaid.
They used to tell me I was building a dream, and so I followed the mob. When there was earth to plow or guns to bear, I was always there, right there on the job. They used to tell me I was building a dream with peace and glory ahead. Why should I be standing in line, just waiting for bread? Once I built a railroad, made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower to the sun, made of brick and rivet and lime. Once I built a tower, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, gee, we looked swell, full of that Yankee doodly-dum. Half a million boots went slogging through hell, and I was the guy with the drum. Say, don't you remember, they called me Al. It was Al all the time. Say, don't you remember, I'm your pal. Buddy, can you spare a dime?
So there's not a lot of music that goes with this prompt, but I did think of this one just of people reaching a point of despair or feeling down and out, and I just looked up that song that Brother, Can You Spare Me a Dime was written by Yip Harburg, and it was written during the Great Depression, and answering the question of what led him to write it, to express the frustration of people who contributed to the nation's prosperity but were now begging for help. And that harkens back to me to the Social Security subject, because people who are receiving Social Security are receiving it because they paid into it all of their working lives.
And exactly. That fund's been borrowed from for very many different reasons that it was not intended for or promised.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, that song just kind of nails the spirit of the times for many people, unfortunately. I guess I will share my submission now, as a matter of fact, being next on the list here. It speaks to my life of privilege that I am not directly personally impacted by most of the changes in effect or anticipated, at least so far. I am retired, no job loss pending. I am on Medicare with a supplemental policy, so any reductions in Medicaid will not affect me directly. And I don't travel to countries that have been recipients of American food and medical assistance by way of USAID programs. So I won't experience in person the shame and embarrassment of representing the country that chose to terminate that support. My Social Security keeps my property taxes paid and food in the cupboard. But therein lies one major vulnerability. Social Security is no longer secure, and our society has lost a major part of its sense of security. I've heard rumors, though so far unsubstantiated, of reduced payments to some individuals already. Discussion of its future is definitely on the table now, and that is extremely unnerving for those of us who depend on it. It is not an entitlement in the sense of belief that one is deserving of or entitled to certain privileges, but an entitlement in the sense of benefits specified especially by law or contract. That is, it has been earned, paid over years of contributions while working, and owed to you personally. Those are definitions of the two kinds of entitlement from Merriam-Webster. The same could be said of Medicare entitlements, so far not threatened that I know of. According to the Social Security Administration, about half of the population, aged 65 or older, live in households that receive at least 50% of their family income from Social Security benefits. And about 25% of aged households rely on Social Security benefits for at least 90% of their household income. In 2025, there are 69 million Americans receiving Social Security, so over 17 million seniors depend on Social Security for at least 90% of their income. Strategizing to reduce those payments for the sake of tax cuts for anyone is, in my opinion, unconscionable. Let's hope it doesn't come to that. I dread the impact of cuts to libraries and library programs, both so important to maintaining our democracy and access to information. While not threatening our local library's budget directly, the funding proposed to be cut will definitely limit our access to materials outside our library and the Arrowhead Library system. That is a direct impact on my life, as I often use the MinLink system to get resources outside of the Arrowhead system. Something that is and will be impacting us all is cuts to weather monitoring and forecasting, especially severe weather alerts. According to Scientific American, the Trump administration is proposing a 27% cut to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's 2026 budget, which would represent a reduction of $1.7 billion to $4.5 billion. NOAA is home to the Storm Prediction Center, the National Hurricane Center, and the National Weather Service. This is a quote now. If you degrade our capabilities, our warnings get weaker and people and property get compromised, a concerned NOAA employee told Business Insider. Damages are going to increase, people are not going to get out of harm's way, and they're going to die, end quote. More from Scientific American. NOAA's Office of Oceanic and Atmospheric Research, or OAR, Oceanic and Atmospheric Research, which funds numerous scientific endeavors, including climate modeling, cloud monitoring, and hurricane forecasting, would be slashed by 74%. OAR is the agency's main research arm, with 11 laboratories and 16 cooperative institutes that collaborate with scientists at various universities. The budget proposal would defund any of them that work on climate, weather, or the ocean. Quoting again, this is a huge threat to research at NOAA, but also to the safety and economic security of the American public, says Craig McLean, a former assistant administrator for research at NOAA. And cuts to medical and environmental research will eventually impact us all as well, as the lost understanding of how things work and what might be possible to improve with that informed understanding will result in a less healthy and less secure society and biosphere. In other words, it will impact all living creatures and landscapes. Lastly, happily, KTWH is not directly dependent on federal funding of any kind. We are completely independent. However, some of our programming sources may be impacted. From a listserv we subscribe to for the radio station, this is quoting, due to uncertainty around federal funding, grants are being pulled from independent media organizations, leaving us high and dry when it comes to our special programming, end quote. We could well be in the same boat. Only about 50 to 60% of our programming is locally produced presently at KTWH. So that is my thoughts on...
Thank you, Fran.
...on the prompt, yes. There's so much more that could be said, but had to draw the line somewhere. As one of the signs at one of the rallies I've been at says, so many issues, so little cardboard, something like that.
I've just been jotting down memes that have been coming up, and I've got pages and pages of them. I had no idea that this was going to snowball like it has.
Well, yeah, people are not taking this lying down.
I should hope not. But then again, there's the question of the courts being overrun and completely jammed. So, you know.
And ignored, the question of rule of law, whether it will prevail or not. Lots up in the air and none of it to be taken lightly, that's for sure. Well, next we have a submission from someone other than the usual suspects here on Listener's Voices. This is from Sherry Zoff, a local member of Farm and Forest Growers Cooperative. There has been a farm and forest cooperative formed that includes farmers from our area looking to diversify their crops and also grow climate-smart trees. This is a program just getting off the ground to grow more resilient trees as climate change is having a negative effect on our forests. Unfortunately, due to USDA funding freezes, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the Climate Smart Commodities Grant has had all the funding frozen. Because of this, the buyers who had planned to buy the trees we grew last year have dropped their orders. This program is dealt a big blow from this, as we work in cooperation with UMD Research and the Nature Conservancy for resilient forests. Our growers were forced to reduce production this spring by an estimated 50,000 tree seedlings, with potential sales of $50,000. It is a shame. Thank you, Sherry. So many projects like this and contracts for research and endeavors like this that have just been cut short in midstream. Things that are hard to pick up again. And in this case, you don't just produce tree seedlings from nothing. And there's some question about whether 18,000 red oak seedlings, I believe they are, that the Nature Conservancy planned to plant this year, their fate is still up in the air. Quite a waste of time and resources and of our opportunity to try to address the changes in our forests and the impact that climate change is having on our forests. We have another submission here. This is an anonymous submission from a federal worker about this person's situation. I will keep this very general because I don't want to identify my agency, mostly to protect my coworkers. Working in a federal agency right now is challenging because of the swirl that is threatening to suck us in and drag us into a vortex. That sounds like an exaggeration, but it feels like we are being made as uncomfortable as possible by being bullied into quitting. Many of us are not planning to leave until we are forced. We are finding creative ways to work and adapting to chaos. Some of the things heard on the news are true. We cannot purchase supplies or plan regular travel, but we need to keep going. We are trying to ignore how many of our friends and coworkers are disappearing, for a number of reasons, without getting to say goodbye. That is the hardest part, and we are constantly threatened with the same fate. At the same time, we are also planning for work in the near future like there is nothing different. We are also lucky that we have people who are supporting us and who go out of their way to tell us so. We are not alone, but sometimes it feels that way. The emotions are a swirl, too. We'll do our best until we can't. We vowed to serve our communities and country, so it's the only choice we have. Thank you for that, anonymous and first-time contributor to Listener's Voices. It's exactly the kind of personal impact story that we are wanting to share, as all of our submissions have been, really, with this prompt.
Let us pause in life's pleasures to count its many tears while we all sop sorrow with the poor. There's a song that will linger forever in our ears. Oh, hard times come again no more. 'Tis the song, the sigh of the weary. Hard times come again no more. Many days you have lingered around my cabin door. Oh, hard times come again no more. While we seek mirth and beauty and music, light and gain, there are frail forms fainting by the door. And though their voices are silent, their pleading looks will say, oh, hard times come again no
another anonymous story I would like to share. I can't give many details to preserve the anonymity, but there's a business in the area which is very dependent for the vast majority of its products on a resource they can only get from China. And so you can imagine what this is about, the tariffs. That business will be heavily impacted if the tariff situation with China doesn't go back to what it had been. Many of these things are changing daily. This show has been pre-recorded a day and two before its airing on Saturday, April 26th. It's hard to keep up with the pace of change, and hopefully this will be one thing among many that will be changing soon for the sake of the viability of that particular business and innumerable others, no doubt. So submissions have been coming in. Kind of last minute here, we have one more anonymous submission. Kind of late in the day here, but we welcome it. From anonymous citizen of planet Earth, someone hearing local voices on the Norwegian Riviera. Responding to, how are the current changes in government funding and practices affecting you personally? Or alternatively, your thoughts or actions around Earth Day? The recorded promo asked for no rants, please. What does it mean to rant? Is it to speak or shout at length in a wild, impassioned way? Response. Without raising my voice, I suggest that the current changes in government practice and cuts of programs threaten the most basic elements of a sustainable planet. The dismantling of productive science that government support has made possible undermines our efforts to safeguard the natural world on Earth Day and every other day of the year. The destruction underway from all this cutting begs us to take the time to make our case in a thoughtful but passionate way to fellow citizens. Our situation demands we defend both the just civil society we seek to achieve and maintain and the natural order we are an overactive part of on this beautiful wild planet, being put at grave risk from unchecked climate change and habitat destruction. Curiously, there are no proposed cutbacks on habitat destruction. Cutting research programs at medical schools, private and public universities, the CDC, NIH, NSF, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, USGS, NOAA, and the National Weather Service, and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency may not seem as dire for U.S. citizens as cuts to Medicaid and nutrition programs, never mind threats to Social Security and Medicare. But demolishing organized science that allows us to track pandemics, develop and deliver life-saving vaccines and medicine, understand how chronic diseases work, and track the ways climate change is unraveling the essential processes that sustain life on Earth is so harmful that you can be certain it's leading to trouble for anyone hearing this. Much of what we take for granted about how our very imperfect but functioning society works is now being taken apart. The only spending growth may come in the budgets of military and domestic security forces used to manage disruption from a growing population of the disenchanted. There will be no safety net for us or the planet, and it's unlikely to be anyone's job to monitor the effects as the human community and thousands of species decline in the aftermath of this vengeful series of actions. This non-rant is but one person's reflection on the prospects of a long, bumpy decline that many of us will experience. I say many, but not all, because quite a few of us will be early casualties, like folks whose cancer drugs are no longer available, those who've been deported to a Salvadoran prison, and the millions worldwide at imminent risk because USAID funding has disappeared. It's not too late to say, no more chaos, but there's not much time to spare. Well, that packs a punch. Thank you, anonymous contributor, for laying it all out there. It's true that these things are going to personally affect every one of us. It's all personal, and it's all political. Well, we've gotten a couple of very late submissions in, and I do believe we are in line to get some more still in the next episode, possibly from some of Richmond's neighbors. This show has been a little bit pieced together from a couple different recording sessions, and we will get back to the time I had with Francis yesterday and close out the show from there. Thank you so much to all those who have contributed, and we invite more submissions as always, regardless of how you feel about what is happening here. If you see silver linings to it, tell us about it. Submissions, of course, are made to ktwhwriters@gmail.com, or you may bring them to the studio here in the Harbor Landing building. So, Francis, any thoughts you'd like to share with us before we move on to Earth Day?
Earth Day. Well, this sort of ties into Earth Day. I'm concerned about a number of issues. It seems like every day there's a new aspect to it to consider. But I did read today that there's a moratorium that was placed on old-growth forest cutting that has been removed, and there will be no hearing of dissent from anyone. There's not even an option to.
Oh, God.
So we'll be seeing people chained to trees again. At least I anticipate that. Some of the largest trees that we have left in this country are on the chopping block now, and I happen to love them.
Yeah, many of us do. I'm sure there'll be a lot of litigation around that, but hopefully.
Well, let's hope the litigation is done before the cutting.
Right, that there are restraining orders that they'll find, whether they'll respect that. Yeah.
That's one thing. Once it's done, it cannot be undone.
Yeah, right, absolutely. There's no putting that money back in the pot. In fact, there's a beautiful poem. It's about putting a tree back together.
Oh.
It's very moving. It's very sensitively done. It's actually a small book-length poem by W.S. Merwin, and it's called Unchopping a Tree. And I love it, even though it's such a tragic
book. Well, there's, the old-growth forests, there are only so much left.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this country used to be covered in it, mm-hmm. and now there's only little teeny pockets. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that there is some way to carve out literal stands that will not be cut.
Right. And then just another aspect of that, with the huge reduction in Forest Service employees, our ability to fight those forest fires. Not that all forest fires should be fought, because that's a whole other matter,
right.
Because we've lost so much natural fire that kept things under control. But there will be fires like we witnessed in Los Angeles within the last few months that need response, a lot of response, a lot of person power, and our ability to provide that is greatly impacted by federal Forest Service reductions.
We're going to have to start the volunteer Minutemen of the forest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Yes, and there are volunteer fire departments out there which...
Are they wildland fire?
They have taken that on, yes. When I don't know how much of it they had done before, but in 1999 there was a straight line wind event in the Boundary Waters and also through the Brimson area just north of me. And the blowdown, it was known as the blowdown of 1999. And the following spring, the Forest Service offered their wildland firefighting training to civilians as well as federal employees and volunteer fire departments. And so I decided that would be a good thing to have. And it was several weekends in March leading up to the fire season. And turned out the same class I was attending over at Pequon Lake Fire Department was attended by some friends of mine from Brimson who were already on the Brimson Volunteer Fire Department, and they recruited me into the department from that experience. And we all got the training that qualifies you to work for the Forest Service as a firefighter, and that is at least half of their mission, I would say. And then I was a volunteer with them. Well, I was a volunteer with the department for 14 years after that. And we never, we assisted with prescribed burns that Superior National Forest did in the area. And we had, I can only right off the top of my head remember two actual wildland fires that we responded to. But it's very valuable training, and they keep up on it, I'm sure. But they cover a huge area, several townships, like at least six full townships, and other volunteer fire departments around the range area and up the shore. I think they all probably have staffing issues, staffing with volunteers. And the thing I just do have to appreciate and share about a volunteer fire department like the Brimson Volunteer Fire Department, they are on call 24/7. They don't have enough people to rotate you're maybe available this time. And you have to be, you have to carry on with your life. So people go to their jobs. Maybe they're in Duluth all day and wouldn't be able to respond or get the pages. But whenever you are in the territory, in the area of coverage, or in the area that your radio will get the pages, if at all possible, you are expected to respond. That's...
So more of us that are trained...
Right.
The safer our community
mm-hmm.
would be.
Mm-hmm. And I would encourage people having water sources in your car, driving around with you. I've come upon fires, unattended fires, and have kept a squirt can, there's other names for it, but a pump can in my car this season. I've just been thinking this week it's time to get it filled up and be driving around with it, because things are getting dry finally. Didn't know this would turn into a fire prevention show here, but
a link between Earth Day and our forest. I've been on no official cleanup crew, but I've been picking up trash along the 61, and I've done a total of I think 4 miles.
Wow!
Lots and lots of cigarette butts.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, wow.
I have recovered the same areas, and they just keep piling up.
Oh, my.
So it's in my mind that if we could get people to stop throwing cigarettes out of their cars, that we might help prevent one of these man-made disasters.
That is a major cause of, in fact, I think human causes are the main causes of oil.
95%. I did some Firewise research.
Wow.
95% caused by humans.
Well, we will close the program out, even though we have a lot of time left, but I will share some of the submissions that Peg Zahorek offered in observance of Earth Day and some music suggestions. I've had several good appropriate music suggestions.
So what is the prompt for next time?
Oh, thank you for asking. Yes, the prompt for next time is May 10th, and that's right getting towards the end of our fund drive week, spring fund drive for KTWH. You might not have heard much about it yet, but the early bird drive starts on May 2nd, I believe. And then the full-fledged drive begins about the 5th, and Saturday the 10th, we will have the prompt of what nonprofits, besides community radio, you support and contribute to, whether that be in time or money or whatever. What other nonprofits besides ours do you support and why?
And if it's not a nonprofit, what do you give your time and attention to?
Yes,
and
good.
Perhaps
point.
Your donations.
Exactly, good. Okay, well, we'll get into some Earth music, we'll get into some Earth Day content now. If you're not able to stick around when I do this, like in 12 hours or 24 hours from now.
Well, I won't be here. No.
Okay, but thank you for joining me through this much of it.
Thank you, Fran.
Yeah, good to have you back.
Fun.
So I will only do one of the quotations, short readings from Thomas Berry that Peg contributed, and following that with some Earth music suggested by Peg and or Leo for the Earth Day theme. We invite future submissions about Earth Day if you're so moved to make them. Thank you for listening to Listeners' Voices. And remember that many of our shows are archived on the KTWH website under the program's drop-down. This is a quotation from Thomas Berry, apparently from a book called Creative Energy, Bearing Witness for the Earth. If the outer world is diminished in its grandeur, then the emotional, imaginative, intellectual, and spiritual life of the human is diminished or extinguished. Without the soaring birds, the great forests, the sound and coloration of the insects, the free-flowing streams, the flowering fields, and the sight of clouds by day and the stars at night, we become impoverished in all that makes us human.
Upturned paddle guides liquid to our dry mouths. Water within us, water surrounds us. A great mystery, our becoming dry at all. Replenish, replenish, all must be replenished. The water within and without. All that fills us, all that surrounds us. The great whistling pines, the tenacious beaver, the ancient loon. The rush of the young eagle's wings as it dips low over our canoe. Replenish the eyes bathed in this delicate solitude, this trembling eternity called back in mid-sweep only to be assessed by greed-parched eyes. Replenish each shriveled heart which has its moments only at events set aside for its song, but cannot fly for the connection between the rock and the human body, the heron's wing and the hope in our souls. We go on, our paddles dance with the lake water to the music in our throats. We will grow dry again, perhaps leap into the water, a small and symbolic celebration of a great and endless task, which gracefully undertaken might allow us all to go on.
Song for the seasons. Do you remember the night? The stars, they sang to the earth. The sky turning this red haze, and the lights from the north come out to play. The world is spinning throughout infinite time. When does it slow? To show people how to see, how to breathe. Wonder, wonder, the raindrops splash against my lids. Awake to a single space, embrace. And the wind take the leaves on a ride. Circles and circles that meet the moon and the tides. Lakes of waves crash to the shores and rocks. A warm spray on a summer's night. My fingers wiggle through wet hair. The sound of the sun rising, making all things grin within. Warmth across the land, day is here. Night, fire stars come to life, stars that warm and burn. Mother, am I safe? Full moons come and go, and with them the lakes that spray. The frozen rain that melts on my face, the lake frozen in its place. And the wind take the snowflakes on a ride. Circles and circles that meet my frozen exhale. Embrace. My eyes close until the sun wakes me.